Hello and welcome to The Gaily Prophet, a podcast where two queer IRL witches do whatever the fuck we want. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Jessie Blount. And today we are talking about 2022's Glass Onion.
Yes, in which I'm going to start by introducing our key players. They are The Disruptors, a.k.a. Andy Brand, the deceased co-owner of Alpha Tech, Birdie J, a problematic famous lady, Claire DeBella, the governor of Connecticut and Senate candidate, Lionel Toussaint, head scientist of Alpha Tech, Duke Cody, a streamer slash men's rights activist, and Miles Braun, the egomaniac billionaire bro owner of Alpha Tech. And then we have our newcomers, Benoit Blanc, the world's greatest detective, Helen Brand, Andy's twin sister, who will be posing as Andy for the length of this movie, and our sort of side characters, Peg, who is Birdie's assistant, and Whiskey, who is Duke's girlfriend. All right, the movie is a whodunit murder mystery a la Clue, set during a weekend getaway on Miles Braun's private island. We learn that all of the disruptors turned on Andy when she threatened to ruin Miles rather than let him put all of their company's finances toward an extremely dangerous experimental fuel. Everything boiled down to the question of who started the company, which could be traced back to a napkin on which Andy wrote the initial idea. The disruptors all lied in court to protect Miles, only then Andy found the actual napkin and threatened to expose him. Someone murdered her for it. All of them had means, opportunity, and motive, so her sister, Helen, poses as her, hires Benoit, and they head to the island with the rest of the crew, do some spying, and finally learn that it was Miles, only then he burns the evidence and there's nothing to be done. Except one thing, smash all of his precious art, light his house on fire using his own experimental danger fuel, and in a dramatic conclusion, burn the literal Mona Lisa, which has been smirking at the debacle for the whole movie. In the end, Miles is finished, his friends are all done being his pawns, Helen has closure, and Benoit is stoked to have solved another case. The end.
And our headline. Genius billionaire has no original ideas, deserves guillotine.
Here, here. All right, we are going to turn to the front page where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else. We start in like the factory, like the Alpha Tech factory or something like that, where there's just this like picture perfect little tiny living room that's just like a rug and some beanbags and like a TV just surrounded by empty warehouse and cement floors. And I think that it's so perfect.
This is how I imagine a lot of like weird tech warehouses are like in, I don't remember if they say where this is, but I'm assuming San Francisco.
Yeah, if it's not literally what it's like, it's spiritually what it's like.
Yes.
It's a really apt depiction, I think.
Exactly. My first thing is the sort of the opening scene of this movie is all of our main characters getting an exciting box that's a giant puzzle box to Miles's fancy COVID Greece vacation. And we have Duke's mom, like, solve half of it for everyone. And I just love her, and I wish she was in more of the movie.
She's so funny. She's, like, not even looking at it, and she just knows what all of it is.
That's because this is a woman who does, like, the New York Times crossword puzzle every week, and she's like, why is your friend sending you children's riddles?
Yeah. Oh, it's so, so good. She's so great. I would have loved to have her instead of Duke, honestly.
Yes.
I want to know what you think Crypto Kids is.
Okay. I'm of two thoughts. It is either A, cryptocurrency for children, or B, it is cryptocurrency, but the currency is images of weirdly drawn like children. I think it's probably closer to the first one because of the tone of this movie, but the only reason I thought it was the second one is because there is a cryptocurrency that's sort of like a weird version of Neopets, not to be confused with the actual Neopets cryptocurrency, like NFTs that they were gonna have that like folded or like didn't actually work, where it's just like weird cat, it's like a weird little cat, like a digital cat you can like breed and collect, and it's like that is your whole, that's your whole cryptocurrency, and it's like tons of real actual money because it's a cryptocurrency. And I'm just like, who is this for? This is for people who like wanted Neopets but worse somehow.
Wow, I know nothing about the world of cryptocurrency at all. Yeah, because it does say that CryptoKids started as a fact that just said kids as NFTs or something like that. So that I'm like, what is that? But I think cryptocurrency for children that somehow is not tied to maybe their parents' actual bank accounts, but still is financially solvent, makes sense.
Yeah. My next thing is Blanc's like week-long depression bath, which I'm like, what a mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like for the listener who is listening but hasn't watched it, he's just like apparently been in his bathtub for a week. He's wearing like a swimming cap or something and like smoking cigars.
It's like a velvet cap with a tassel, and he's like smoking a cigar, and like he's like surrounded by books and is playing Among Us with like four very famous people. Yeah. And you're just like, and it's both like a mood and also just like, I'm sorry, what?
I know. Oh, it's incredible.
And those famous people are, of course, Stephen Sondheim. Oh, wow. Why did I look up the pronunciation?
Sondheim.
Stephen Sondheim, Angela Lansbury, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Natasha Lyonne.
So glad that you paid attention to that. I only caught Natasha Lyonne because like he says her name and I was like, wait a second, wait, like really Natasha? And that was like as far as I got on that.
Yeah, I looked it up amongst some other fun trivia that I will reveal, but nice. Yeah, it's just a deeply silly scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned the box again, listeners, so for folks who haven't seen it, it's this like huge box, I don't know, like 2.5 by 2.5 maybe.
Yeah,
like a foot deep, made of like wood veneer, and you have to go through all of these puzzles to be able to open the box, and we see all of our main characters like figuring out how to open the box, and then we get to Helen Brand, who is like just found out that her sister is dead and is looking at this box and like vaguely trying to figure out how to open it, and then just gets a hammer and just fucking destroys it. And it is so beautiful.
I love the whole opening scene with the box, but yeah, just her, this like the, it's like she's sitting in silence and then she walks off camera and then she comes back and just like the silent rage of her just smashing that box to shit is just like, just perfect. It's perfect.
It is. It's amazing.
When they get to Miles's fancy island, Greek island location, he's like, imagine it as more of a commune for creativity. And I was like, imagine a commune for creativity for people who aren't billionaires. I really think that we are the people who deserve a commune of creativity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's such a like, just like terrible rich dude thing to say about your like ridiculous house
that you singularly alone live in with your 50 staff members and then just a one random dude who is going through a hard time.
Yeah, before we, like when they first get to the dock, we get this, you know, very mysterious throat-based COVID vaccine that, like, I just fucking love that this movie is like, oh yeah, rich people have had a vaccine for COVID since 2020. I think this is set in 2020.
It's set in actually May of 2020, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just like, oh yeah, the billionaires have had it all along, and like, they don't, the people who get the vaccine don't get to know what it is. Dude's just like, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the fact that a certain Cheeto adjacent former president didn't perish of COVID makes me 110 10% believe that rich people have some shit that we are not do not have access to in regards to COVID.
Yep.
All right. So there's a lot of really excellent lines in this movie. One of my favorite lines is Miles has a temper tantrum because he spent a lot of money for a murder mystery weekend that Blanc solves in literally a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And then Miles is like, I paid Gillian Flynn to write that, which makes me laugh so much. And I'm not sure if you know this, like Gillian Flynn is a popular thriller writer. She wrote Gone Girl, which was like the it thriller of the past like 10 years, which for the record is very good. She writes a lot of like Southern Gothic thrillers, essentially. I've read all her stuff. She's great. And it just makes me laugh that he like found like the premier contemporary thriller mystery writer to like write his murder mystery. That Blanc was just like, okay, yeah, next. What a lovely amuse-bouche that was.
Yeah, okay. So when Miles is having that temper tantrum, like, Blanc compares the difficulty level of the murder mystery that he spent all of this money and anticipated it taking all weekend to solve to the New York Times mini crossword puzzle. Which, for people who don't play it, is a, like, usually, like, four or five square. Like, it is tiny. I usually solve them in, like, between, like, 45 seconds and, like, 2 minutes, depending on the day of the week, because they're harder on different days of the week. Like, they are very, very easy. And so this is so rude. Like, I need everyone to understand how incredibly rude this is.
Like, imagine, like he spent, like, I guess I'm going to be charitable. Let's say multiple millions of dollars to get this author to write this thing. And Blanc is like, okay, cool. Checkers. Great. Yeah. Awesome.
Where's my iPad?
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so Duke, our men's rights activist, streamer, nightmare human, just walks around with a cocked, loaded gun just pointing at his dick. Like, listeners, he's swimming in a Speedo and he has his gun holster on and it is like over his cock and he just takes it out and shoots it. Like, it is ready to fire. And I don't know, like,
this is definitely improper gun safety. The possibility of him shooting off part of his dick, very real. Like, that's why, I mean, he's wearing it in a holster, but it is the teeniest worthless holster. And if it's like, he's like, has it like stuck in his Speedo, like you're supposed to, that's how you get things blown off.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something just so, like, beautiful about this dude whose whole deal is, like, making the world a worse place. Being like, yeah, no, I live so dangerously that I'm willing to, like, literally shoot my own dick off at any second.
Apparently the actor who plays him was like, oh, so I have to wear this Speedo and we're putting a gun in this. Okay. All right. He was a little embarrassed about it because apparently in real life he's a very lovely guy and really outspoken against, like, gross Nazi shit and alt-right shit and very like pro-queer. Like, he just like is a lovely, like a complete opposite basically of this character in real life, which I love. So I'm just like imagining him being like, okay, yeah, I'll wear the Speedo with the gun over my that's okay. You guys are really pushing the metaphor here, right?
Oh, I do really like hearing that the actor is a good person. I feel like I thought about that a lot with Kate Hudson, too, because both of those characters, either the actor has to be, like, really morally gray, or they have to be pretty great to be willing to play those characters on screen. And I would hope that as a, like, casting director and whatever, that you'd be like, I actually want everyone to have fun and like each other, so I'm actually gonna look for like really good people, like genuinely good people to play these roles.
Yeah. 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 Apparently that dude is a good guy in real life, which is great. So,
yeah.
Okay. We get in this movie an excellent flashback about how Andy ended up befriending all these shitheads, as Helen so succinctly summarizes them as.
Wait, and can I just say really quickly, the subtitles capitalize the shitheads like it's a band.
This is the movie I didn't watch with the captions on, so I'm glad that you said that. That's incredible.
Okay, please continue.
And they go through why, like, Andy was sort of the ringleader of the gang, and, you know, sort of where everyone was at when they first met, just being like overworked, underpaid 30 somethings. And they're like, yeah, she was one who brought Miles in. And I'm like, the only reason to have brought Miles in is because he was a white dude with money. Like, that's the only thing in my brain.
Same. Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, no, I'm like, he's what is even the word? He has generational wealth, and that is why she was like, yeah, all right, you have like aspirations and like want the same things as me and have no original ideas, but you can fund all of this stuff. Come on in. Let's do this.
He definitely went to an Ivy.
Yeah, totally. And got through with like C's.
Yep. But was definitely in a fucked up secret society. Anyway.
So the thing, Helen and Benoit are like having a check-in about like everything they've learned, and they're like in the gym of the island, and there's a sort of static light up poster behind them of, I think, Serena Williams.
It is Serena.
And then they're having a very damning conversation, and then all of a sudden you realize that it's not a poster. Like, it's her on a video screen waiting to give a lesson. I died. Oh my god, it's so funny.
There are some really excellent famous cameos. That is my favorite of all of them. Because she's like reading a book. She clearly gives zero fucks. She's like, I am making, again, probably millions of dollars to be zoomed in here. I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not care about this, whatever's happening.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
I think my last thing is that, and we'll get into the sort of structure of this movie, I think, later, but we find out Helen doesn't drink very much, and the fact that she gets drunk off of hard kombuchas throughout, like, the first day is deeply funny.
It's so great.
It's like, oh, it's like wish people healthy shit. It's like, that is a high APV. That is like, I'm like, she's basically getting drunk off, like, I think I put in my notes, like, whole food wine coolers, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 9% is high. That is like really high for not hard alcohol.
Yeah, I feel like whenever I have a hard, like a beer or a hard cider that's like 6 or 7, I'm like, ooh. Yeah. Gonna have a couple of these. Like, 9% is a lot.
Yeah. Welcome to the style section, where we talk about aesthetics. Benoit's stripy little pool outfit.
Oh my god. How badly do you want that?
So, so badly. Oh my god. It's beautiful. Listeners, if you go to our website, the post for this episode on our website will have screenshots of many of the beautiful outfits and things like that that we talk about, because if you haven't watched this movie, you should at least look at the things we're describing here.
Yeah, I feel like I literally said, oh my god, out loud when he like walked out in that outfit. So I'm just like, it's like just like a perfect dandy outfit, and you're just like, I need that. Mm-hmm. And he's wearing like a little like, it's like, so it's like, everyone is like blue and white striped. Is it one piece or two? I actually couldn't tell.
It's one piece, but it buttons on top, I think.
All right. So like shorts, short sleeve, like thick, diagonal, like blue and white stripes. And he's wearing a like yellow like bandana that he's like sort of tied. I don't know how it's tied, but it's just like very like tight around his neck. And it just is such a flawless look.
It's gorgeous. I honestly, for the last like 2 or 3 years, have been trying to find a like jumper, whatever you call that, for summer wear that is made of a material that I can touch, and I have not been successful. So yes, I was incredibly jealous. Not that I would wear one that had white on, but still, style, cut, everything like that. And I believe he does tell Birdie that it's cotton, so like exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, the internet says seersucker. I assumed it was linen, but
it does look like linen. It might be something else that he's wearing that she touches and is like, what is that fabric?
Yeah.
It's like cotton.
Yeah, I just think overall, I like how every character has a very specific aesthetic as sort of a like, here's how, like us revealing things about the character. But I have to say that, yes, like Benoit's outfits are very like, he's walked out of a mid-century crime thriller, you know?
It's like cozy fancy. He just, yeah, he always looks so comfortable, but so dressed up at the same time. It is something that I would love to figure out how to accomplish.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it's like he doesn't look out of place with all of these rich people. I mean, he's also rich, seeing his apartment.
Yeah. I don't think he's rich. I'm like, well, I guess they're not all the same level of rich either. I don't think being a governor pays particularly well.
I mean, not in Connecticut.
Connecticut.
I felt they wouldn't. I mean, who knows? Anyway, yes. Not the same level of rich. But yeah, Benoit's outfits, flawless. I also love everything that they have Birdie. Like, everything Birdie's wearing is very, like, flashy and just, it's very eye-catching.
That rainbow dress that she wears, stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, she's, and it, which makes sense. She's like an ex-model, like fashionista, as much as I hate that word. Like, kind of, that's her whole thing.
Yeah.
Like her plague party look.
Yeah. Oh my God, fucking Birdie. She's like, they're all in my pod. There's like 75 people at this party.
Yeah. I know. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Like, literally everything she wears is like perfect. Not perfect is Miles's house. It's like the, I think that in general, wealthy people's homes are incredibly tacky, bad tacky, not good tacky.
Yeah.
And I feel like his is sort of like peak. Why would you do that?
It's awful.
It is. He has like all this very famous art everywhere, but he also, okay, here's my favorite thing, and I couldn't find it, so now I think that I've like invented it in my head, but I swear the like naked giant oil portrait of himself is like a Edward Norton version of like a Brad Pitt thing from Fight Club that seen.
It is exactly, they semi-imposed Edward Norton's face onto Brad Pitt's body from Fight Club for that.
But where
poster.
Is, I searched the whole internet and I couldn't find like the original of that at all.
I don't know if it's an original or something that they just created for, because I mean, Edward Norton is ripped for Fight Club, but he's not young Brad Pitt ripped for Fight Club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know. But I like the style of it. I'm like, I swear I've seen like that, but maybe it's just like the pose that he's in. Or something. But it's like very clearly a Fight Club reference. And I'm glad to know that that's true and not just something that my brain made up.
No, that is literally true.
Yeah. That's great. Also, I do feel like that's the one maybe like good tacky thing is having like a giant, like literally listeners, I don't know, 15 by 15 oil portrait of yourself naked in your living room.
I mean, I won't lie. If I had, I mean, I would never be a billionaire because that's unethical, no matter how you cut it. If I had a bunch of money, I would definitely be like Candide Wiley. I would like you to commission a giant portrait, like a 30 by 30 portrait of me on a fucking horse. Like, actually, not on a fucking horse, on a fucking Pegasus, because this is my fantasy. Let me look like I'm fighting in the space war.
Listeners, we do have a P.O. box.
Oh. Anyway.
Hashtag ruthless.com/contact.
I do want to say that Edward Norton having just like a mishmash of all of his famous art is very real thing that billionaires do.
Yep.
And so I appreciate them just being like, yeah, throw that one famous Matisse that is a, like the cover of The Body Keeps Score in his fucking bathroom. Why the fuck not?
Yep.
Yeah.
We should mention here that he's taken advantage of the pandemic to loan the Mona Lisa from the Louvre, and it is just in his living room, which is like a huge point of like recurring main theme thingy of this movie.
It's like, if you had that much money, that is, I feel like you would be like, I'm gonna put it in a completely like black, not a black room, but like a completely just solid colored room, so you can just like sit there and like contemplate it or something, and not just like garishly having it in your next to all your tacky glass sculptures of like Beatles song references. It's just like,
I feel like it is pitch perfect that he just like has it. Not only does he have it in the room, but he has like an override button for the like protective box that it's supposed to be in.
Yeah, that's definitely on point for him, because I'm like, that's not how I would do it if this was me. And yeah. I'm like, this is just very like, look at how much money I have. And I'm like, I feel
like I've heard that even in the Louvre you can like barely see it because it's behind like heavily tinted glass to keep it safe from the light. So the idea that he's just like, yeah, no, expose it to light and air and everything, which like, I don't know, who fucking cares about the Mona Lisa, but like,
yeah,
whatever, he does, clearly.
All right, I think that we would be remiss, I would be remiss if I didn't mention everything basically that Janelle Monáe wears in this movie. I mean, yeah. Okay, granted, Janelle Monáe, one of the hottest people you can just see with your two eyes,
yeah,
in the world.
Yeah.
But they're also dressed like they're in a mid-century crime thriller. And I don't know if you managed to take a look at the link that I sent you earlier. It actually really reminds me of years ago, they did a photo shoot for W Magazine that, like, it was them and Jordan Peele, and they're, like, dressed up like they're in a made-up Hitchcock movie. And I have that issue because I'm just like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life. Someone give, this is like years ago. So I'm like, someone give Jordan Peele all the money to put Janelle Monáe in a like crime thriller. And this is, this is honestly great. Like having them here in these like fabulous black and white, you know, dresses and suits, just being like, I am a rich business lady and I fucking hate all of y'all.
Yeah, it's everything is like highly tailored, very clean lines, but also a lot of like asymmetry. It's just fucking flawless. Absolutely, yeah. Flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, definitely it's inspired by like Hitchcock. It's inspired. There's another couple of movies from like the 50s or 40s or 50s or 60s that this movie is inspired by. So a lot of these looks are very sort of classic, fancy looks. But Janelle Monáe just pulls off all of them.
Yes.
every single one. And it's just, and I mean, so there's two outfit changes for like the climax of this movie where they're wearing this beautiful like black and white dress and this like beautiful, this like all white suit that's just like, oh my god, just how are you this flawless?
Yeah.
Costuming this movie is on point. Good job, whoever did this.
Totally. Yeah. My last note here is just that in the sort of flashbacky scene where everyone's 30 and in the bar, we learned that Lionel apparently just used to be a lesbian. I don't know. It's like his hair and the denim. And you're just like, it's incredible. That's I'm not insinuating that Lionel is trans, listeners. I'm just saying that he looks like a lesbian in this scene.
You know, that's really funny because besides like the people I've mentioned, Duke is wearing an outfit where it's like really tight pink pants and an open leopard print shirt. Like it has actual leopards on it. And it's such a thing where I'm like, wow, I would wear that. And I'm like, wow, what a queer ass outfit you're wearing, my dude.
It is wild. Everything that he wears is so gay. He's wearing like over his Speedo, these like cheetah print pants, but they don't cut. It's like, what are the things that cowboys wear? Chaps? They don't cover the insides of his legs or like his crotch at all. And they're like flowy. Yeah. Everything that he wears, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Just, I'm not sure that your clothing style and your personality are the same person.
Yeah. You're very correct.
Welcome to the politics section, where we talk about things that are fucked up.
I think we should start off light and then move down. So you want to talk about Birdie?
Let's talk about Birdie. So going back to what I said earlier about like casting for something like this, because I feel like you have to be someone where if someone Googles like the name of the actor and like controversy, like nothing comes up, to be someone who agrees to play a character like Birdie. And hilariously, the only thing that comes up when you Google Kate Hudson controversy is that she went to Greece during the pandemic and it made people mad.
Did she go to Greece to film this movie?
I don't know. She just posted a picture on Instagram of her and her family in Greece, and people were like, how dare you travel? There's a pandemic.
Because this is shot in Greece. So I'm like, was she like filming?
I know.
This?
She might have been there for work. Who knows? It was in 2021, so I don't know when they filmed this.
But, I guess I don't really know either.
But I like literally laughed out loud when I saw that. So the character, Birdie, they just were like, is it a fucked up thing that like influencers and famous people do and have done? Give it to Birdie. She's done all of it. Every single thing.
Yeah. I mean, what did she compare herself to? Beyonce and Harriet Tubman?
No, she went as Beyonce, presumably in blackface for Halloween, and then went on Oprah and compared herself to Harriet Tubman.
And I think the fact that Birdie's like a caricature, obviously, of this certain kind of just like clueless white influencer, so it's like it's so over the top that it's just like it's genuinely funny when these things come out, because you're just like, oh, of course you did.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, there's, it's so great because you can tell that there's literally no ill will there. She just, I almost want to say she's never been told no, but clearly people around her are telling her no all the time. But it's, she just, she's made of Vaseline, like it just slides right away.
Yeah. And I think that, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. It's like Birdie is sort of the darkest incarnation of a bimbo character, because we have this honestly just hilariously awful scene where her assistant is confronting Birdie about her athleisure wear company, like the clothing being made in a like known sweatshop. And then Peg being like, did you think that sweatshops were where sweatpants were made? And then like Birdie's sort of face, where you're like, I think maybe you did.
She fully did.
She genuinely thought that. And then you're like, oh, honey, no.
It's so wild. There's also the thing where she's like, I didn't know what a blood diamond was. And like, you have to assume that she was like bragging about that diamond that she owns, like being a blood diamond, because she just like thought that if it had like a special word to describe it. That must be part of its specialness. And you're just like,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is why you can't have your own phone. Like, Peg is correct.
Yeah, this is why Peg is spending, like, you know, a fourth of her income on therapy, because.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. I think she fits into this movie just so well, because, like, revealing all of these things, you're just like, oh, but you literally couldn't have. And it's like, oh, you did.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, obviously everything she's doing is, like, really, really terrible. And I feel like her and Duke are both sort of extreme epitomes of, like, dangerously problematic influencers and, like, public figures. And she's sort of this, like, it's almost harmless. Like, it's obviously very harmful, the things that she does. A lot, not all of them, but a lot of the things that she does are very harmful. But, like, because there's no, like, ill will behind it, I feel like, I don't know what I want to say. Like, she's not trying to influence people, whereas Duke is, like, literally, like, marketing himself as someone that, like, young adolescent boys should, like, look up to and respect, as someone who's, like, actively trying to make the world worse for people.
Yeah, and I think what the movie does a pretty good job of is, like, right, like, both Duke and Birdie are objectively, like, some of the worst people, sort of the worst people that have come out of the past, like, 15 years of, like, being online.
Yeah.
And somehow the movie makes you not hate them any more than, like, anyone else except for Miles. Because Miles is the, like, capital V villain, as yeah. almost all billionaires are.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, it's just, it's entertaining to kind of see them as just, like, not very good people. Not, like, evil mustache twirling villains. Just, like, sort of, like, inept following the money villains. Which is just, it's, like, worse. But the, like, lack of, like, active malicious intent makes it sort of feel like you're kind of a product of capitalism. You know?
Yeah, and I think that Duke is doing it for the money. And again, I feel like Birdie just, like, she just has the money and is like, therefore I must be good or something like that. And so, like, everything I do must be fine. And then when people are like, no, don't do that, there's no incentive for her to be like, should I learn about why that was bad? Should I, like, put any effort into thinking about, like, why I have to apologize for this thing? No. No, I don't need to.
Yeah, it's like, I can't imagine where she would have gotten the message that being rich makes you a morally good person and, like,
right.
makes you able to make, like, you know, the right. It does, you know, don't know where she could have gotten that from.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have Whiskey also sort of representing that, where she's like, yeah, everything Duke's doing is, like, really, really awful. But, like, he's getting me exposure and I'm going to, like, go out on my own. So I got to, like, keep dating him and showing up on his, like, men's rights channel until I have enough, like, followers. And then I'm going to go into politics, she says.
You know, I Whiskey's such an interesting character. Movie. It's like, do I, like, I feel some sympathy for you, but then also the things that you are doing to get ahead is, like, real dubious.
Yeah,
and you know
terrible.
And, like, she knows it's all fake. Like, she and Duke know how fake this is. And we see this as soon as we get a clip of his terrible men's right activist bullshit video. And then it's like you find out he's living in his mom's basement, like, literally living in his mom's basement. And she's like, don't talk shit to me.
Yeah,
you know, he's like, yes, mom.
Yeah, I feel, yeah, I mean, I think we get the impression from the movie that, like, he probably doesn't believe any of the things that he's saying on his channel. He's just doing it because it's how he makes his money. And I'm like, is that worse? That might be worse.
And then you're sort of like, and there's gotta be people on the internet who's like, who are doing shit like Birdie and like Duke for that exact same reason. But it's like, you can't separate the people who are just doing it for the money from the people who, like, genuinely in their souls believe that cis men are superior to everyone else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that it feels worse to me is because I think that means that he knows that it's bad and he's choosing to do it anyway. Whereas people who actually believe it don't know that they're bad. You know, they know that other people think that they're bad, but they think that they're right. And that's horrifying. But yeah. I think it's worse to like intentionally choose to make the world a worse place, like knowingly, on purpose.
Yes.
And by manipulating essentially children.
Yeah. I mean, the sort of running joke about him selling, which also connects to whatever episode I'm talking about, Ivory, his rhino horn boner pills, mm-hmm. which she was like, it didn't even contain real rhino. And I'm like, oh my God, dude.
Yep. I would like to talk about what this movie does with telling us who these characters are by the way that they interact with masks.
Yes.
It's so good.
I think, and I haven't seen very many movies made in the past couple of years, but I feel like this is so far the best media portrayal, I think, of when people were taking the pandemic seriously. I guess mm-hmm. I should say, because everyone was still in the pandemic. But yeah, so, and we kind of have a, like, Benoit meeting all of the characters on this dock in Greece, and we see sort of everyone's mask protocol, which is very much, I think, indicative of their characters. So Lionel, who's a scientist, is, like, wearing it, like, N95, and What's-Her-Face, who's a senator, is, like, a cloth mask. Does she have a real mask on, but it's just, like, on incorrectly?
She has a cloth mask on, but it's not covering her nose. And then Birdie... is wearing a mask, but it's just like woven gold.
Yeah, it's like mesh. It's like I'm just like, this is.
Honestly, I think isn't one of Janelle Monáe's album covers? They're wearing like a face covering that's sort of like gold links and this same style. It's like that, but it goes across Birdie's.
I feel like even the like album cover of Dirty Computer, the mask thing that Janelle Monáe is wearing, it probably would provide more COVID protection than this like just non-existent wide mesh that Birdie has on her.
Yeah,
face.
It's like half inch lengths.
And you're just like, what was even the point of that?
Yeah, and then Benoit has this incredibly stylish, like very tailored polka dot cloth mask that's beautiful. And this was 2020 when we thought cloth masks were sufficient.
Yeah.
And I think they were more sufficient then. It was not as aerosolized at that point. And then obviously Duke and Whiskey don't wear masks.
Yeah, of course not.
No.
I think this is probably the same reason why Duke does not have an EpiPen, but I guess we could talk about that later. So like he's too butch for that.
Yeah. I mean, no one knew why he was dying. I don't think he even knew. And also it seems like the
him and Whiskey both knew that he had a pineapple allergy. He mentions it on
No. I know, but in the moment where it's happening, no one knew what had happened. And I just don't feel like he really had enough time between like ingestion and death to use an EpiPen.
That's fair.
Maybe if it had been in his gun holster.
The only reason you should have a holster is to carry your EpiPen around. Especially when you're deathly allergic to something that you might be cross-contaminated with. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So, sorry. I have Miles as a whole thing. And then I think my sort of last point is about Helen's justice for Andy, I guess. Justice? So.
Let's do it.
All right. I guess we should start off. I literally just have as my note, billionaires as content warning. Because Miles and, okay, Ryan Johnson, whoever wrote this movie, he's like, I wasn't totally basing this off of Elon Musk, but and it's like Miles is kind of a conglomeration of a lot of terrible white like tech billionaires, but it's very strongly Elon Musk territory. But I guess I was particularly thinking about how, as people say in this movie, like Miles isn't a genius. Like he's not this chess master who's like creating all this cool stuff. Like he's just profiting off of other people's brilliance / hiring people to do brilliant cool things, you know.
Yep. Yeah, which is fully Elon Musk, who's just like, I can buy my way in to stuff.
I mean, like it's Elon Musk, but it's also sort of like people have this idea that people like Bill Gates and, oh my God, what is the guy from Amazon?
Jeffrey Bezos.
Jeff Bezos are like self-made billionaires, like in their parents' garage, like making this thing. And it's like, I mean, like Jeff Bezos got a huge loan from his parents. Bill Gates, his mom worked at IBM and was able to get him a meeting to be like, look at my son's computer. And as we discussed, like, it's probably pretty possible that the only reason Annie makes friends with Miles is because he has generational wealth. Like, he mentions going to the Louvre at six. Like, I don't know how many people, I mean, obviously you can not only rich people go to Paris, like that's not a thing, but it is, it just, it feels like the way that he acts and behaves is just kind of like, you've never gone without, clearly.
Right, totally.
And you're used to just people being able to like hire someone to do a thing and being able to just like grease some palms and like make things happen and never have to actually make a thing, make a living, do a thing. And he's just like a mediocre white dude, essentially.
Yeah.
But because he has all this money and all this money that he made from Andy's idea, people think he's a genius. And right. I think, and like, that is, I think, the biggest, one of the biggest Elon Musk things. But I'm like, not, like, I mean, Rihanna, maybe, is maybe the only, like, genius you can be, like, genius billionaire, you know?
Right.
Like, Oprah, probably. Like, everyone else is just, like, you're just, it's either, like, generational wealth, or you're just, like, you were able to use connections you already had to, like, level up, essentially.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that he's, like, that someone like Miles should be like, let's put hydrogen in everyone's homes to power your homes, you know?
Yeah. I think that that's also what makes him so dangerous is because he, I think very similar to Elon Musk, like enough people believe that you're some sort of genius and you start believing that you're some sort of genius. And we know that he wasn't always like that. Like, we get that scene with Birdie talking about how much he used to like be in awe of knowing her and like, you know, think obviously much less of himself. But at this point, he believes that he earned this wealth and that he created it, right?
That he deserves it.
Right. And that makes him, I think, very easy to manipulate into, you know, whoever came to him with this like solid hydrogen fuel idea. And they were like, think of, you know, you're about to solve climate change, you know? And he's like, fuck yeah, I am. And so everyone being like, no, that's like really dangerous. He's like, no, like I am a genius. And so like, I am correct. And that's so dangerous. Like, people who think that they're smarter than they are, who have a lot of money, are incredibly dangerous people.
Yes. And I love, what I love particularly about this movie is that we as the audience also buy into that because we're expecting, like, this is a murder mystery. You're expecting like, oh, someone's going to have a really clever plan because they really wanted to avoid detection. And it wouldn't be Miles. That would be so obvious for the dude who's like in an open, who's like had this contentious lawsuit with Andy to murder her. That would just, why, like, no, it would, you wouldn't do that. You would be like, wow, everyone would figure that out immediately. But Miles is just so sure of his own quote unquote genius that he's like, no one's going to suspect me. And right. Even it even throws off Benoit because he's just like, oh, I spent like 2/3 of this movie thinking that like all these people were suspects, thinking that it was just like this can be this like convoluted, complex plan. And it was just this mediocre white dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes. Literally, that is like the best thing about this movie is like, I mean, it's so much about this movie is so great. Like the fact that numerous times they're like, this is like Clue. And Benoit's like, it's not like Clue because I am bad at Clue because it's dumb. And listeners, that's not a word we usually use on the show. I'm like quoting the movie. And like the reason that it takes him so long to solve this mystery is because it's not sophisticated. It's not complicated. And he's like, he's quote unquote bad at dumb things. look so mad when he does figure it out, because he's like, oh, it's like so, it's too obvious for me to even have like seen it, because it's just like right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like just, it's like such an excellent, I think, subversion of like what you expect in like a murder mystery, that it's just, and for it to like play out with like these just like terrible people and their sort of relation to power and like money is just like, it's such a rich text.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, I think I have to end this section with sort of my sort of grappling with the ending, I think. So, okay. You know, Helen finds the napkin with Andy's original ID on it, proving that Andy was the originator of all of the alpha money and company and not Miles. Miles burns it. And then it's like, cool, now what? And then it's like, all of your evidence is circumstantial about me being involved in her murder. And Benoit's like, can't really technically do anything about that, Helen. So I'm just going to plant some seeds of some ideas and then like walk out so I have plausible deniability for the police. And then Andy blows up the glass onion using the clear hydrogen, I mean, MacGuffin, essentially. And also destroys the Mona Lisa because of Miles's ridiculous. And so, and I mean, for the most part, Benoit is like, right. Like, if Miles is like a billionaire, like, he can hire an entire law school of people to be like, I did not murder that person. And so the only like justice that we get for Andy's murder is going to be the sort of like public, legal, financial dragging he's going to get for having destroyed one of the most famous artwork in like Western European American civilization, yeah. You know? And I think when I first saw this, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this as like the justice that Andy gets. Cause like that's it. And I think on my second rewatch, I'm kind of like, Miles having his entire reputation and legacy destroyed would ruin him more than like hiring a bunch of lawyers to keep him out of jail. And I think for that, I would let the entire Louvre burn if it meant justice for like an unjustly murdered black person.
Yeah. I mean, right. The thing is, Miles was never going to be found guilty. Like, as Helen and Benoit establish, every single person on that island had means, motive, and opportunity. So even though they have ruled everyone else out, like, the lawyers that he would have would make it so that, like, correctly, a jury would not be able to say beyond a reasonable doubt. They would find his fingerprints in her house. That would not be enough. Like, he goes there.
Yeah.
And, like, rich people are the only people who get fair trials where, like, you actually have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And no matter what, even if he hadn't burned the napkin, he was not going to prison.
Yeah.
So, like, ruining him is way better, I think. Like,
yeah.
How devastating would it have been to, like, sit through that trial that would have been, like, the fucking O.J. Simpson trial. It would have gone on for months.
Yeah.
And then at the end have him found not guilty.
Like, yeah.
So, yeah. And then, you know, everyone's, like, not gonna say that Helen was responsible for any of this. They're gonna say that Miles fucked up because everyone's fucking over having him manipulate them. And
but like they're not credible witnesses because they've also like, okay, so then like perjury because you lied to their oath the first time. And it's like,
right. I guess what I'm getting at with that is that I don't think that like Helen is going to get in trouble for having done any of this. And so I think it's great.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. And then I guess Helen can take Andy's money because Andy was still rich. Like,
yeah,
she can take Andy's money and do something cool with it, you know? And it's like she can live out her life knowing that she completely destroyed Miles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, that's honestly more. And like, I don't think obviously that sending people to prison is like good. I don't think prisons are good. So I think completely ruining everything that brought Miles joy is like the perfect revenge.
And I think we also should she saved the world. Like, it seems like Clear was gonna do a lot of damage. Like, maybe not, like, destroy the world damage, but, like, kill a fuckload of people damage. Yeah.
And, like, let's be real, a fuck ton of poor people, because they're not going to put hydrogen power into rich people's homes. They're going to put it into, like, public housing or some shit like that, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. No. Helen is a hero with a capital H in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to end by saying that I'm glad Duke died.
You know, it is. I'm also glad that I don't have to see, like, because, like, obviously, Andy did not deserve to die, like, the complete opposite. So seeing, so, like, if you're going to have one more person be murdered in this movie, it should be the terrible, like,
yeah,
like the other terrible dude in the situation.
Yep.
Like, actively making the world a worse place. And then, like, you're going to, like, blackmail your friend that you know murdered your other friend. And you're just like, this is going to be fine. Nothing's going to happen to me.
Right. Yeah. No, he was terrible. And I spit on his grave. Welcome to Editorials, where we rant about stuff.
I surprisingly still have rants.
Cool. Why don't you start?
All right. First off, Janelle Monáe is literally playing two different characters in this movie. One character who is like impersonating her own twin sister.
Mm-hmm.
And they fucking kill it. They kill it. Like, I'm just like, Janelle Monáe's talent, like, knows no bounds.
Yeah.
Excellent music. Excellent designing, like, science fiction imagining. Like, they're a writer. They're an actor. And I think this is maybe, like, their biggest film role. And yeah, just knocks it out of the park. In a movie already filled with, like, very talented people, they are just, like, the cream of the crop. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
They make this movie, honestly.
Yeah, it's great. It's so good. The, like, them having different accents, the two sisters, makes it really nice, like, so great, because, like, Helen, like, transitioning from the, like, affected Andy accent to her own accent is done so well that you, like, truly believe that this is, I don't really know how to say what I'm trying to say, but it's great. Very good acting, 10 out of 10. That's what I'm trying to say.
And, like, in my second rewatch, I noticed that in the second half of the movie, when we get sort of a lot more of Helen playing Andy, that there is a couple of times when Helen slips up and, like, you can kind of hear her, like, natural southern twang come through, but then she's sort of, like, it's mostly when she's, like, in the scenes where she's drunk too much and she's, like, getting kind of excited about it, and it's like it's like a little bit slips out, and then it's like she brings it back in, and you're just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, my first rant is that I think it's silly that Birdie is ever meaningfully on the list of potential suspects, because, like, she's just not clever enough to have done this murder. Full stop. She just isn't.
Yes. Birdie and Peg together, though, possibly.
True.
And I think for, like, sort of the purposes of this movie, it makes sense for Helen and Benoit to, like, put her on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
But, like, you're right. She's definitely on the very low end of people who are, I'm like, really?
Yeah. And okay, so for the listener who hasn't watched the movie, the Andy's murder is done by someone putting sleeping pills in some tea or coffee or something that she's drinking, and then putting her in her car in the garage with the engine running. And yeah, I don't know. There's kind of just, like, nothing in there. And by there, I mean Birdie's brain. So,
yeah, I feel like if Birdie was, like, next to Andy and they were by a cliff or a tall building, she would maybe consider pushing Andy off of it. And, like, that's really as far as I could see her trying to, like, come up with the murder plan.
Yeah, like, even if Peg had been, like, on board and was like, yeah, you should murder Andy and had given Birdie like step-by-step directions, she would have fucked it up. Like, that's just the kind of person that she is.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's your turn.
All right. So Helen is a like excellent detective. She's helping out Benoit like figure out this murder. And like in a lot of ways doing a better job than him, because she's like not about any of this bullshit. She's a in the movie, she's like a third grade teacher. So she's like can see through childish bullshit. And she doesn't, she doesn't have the same blind spot for simplicity that Locke even says himself, that like, I can't do Clue. It's too simple. It's too dumb. And so she's really doing all the legwork. She's doing a lot of the like work. She does a really excellent job. My own, my one thing that she does not do that, like, honestly, her and Andy, is that if it, if this all comes down to the original napkin that Andy sketched out, this like vast idea for like this fake Facebook or whatever this is that they came up with, why didn't anyone just take a photo of it? Like, make a copy, send it to your lawyer, put it on your on Twitter, like just anything. So then when Miles is like, oh, I'm just gonna light it on fire, now what? I'm just like, no.
I know. That, and I, this wouldn't bother me if Helen hadn't used a recorder earlier in the movie, but she does. And then, like, I cannot imagine going down to confront Miles in front of all of these people with this fucking napkin, not recording the conversation.
That is such a good point. Have as much evidence.
Yes. And then she does a lot of like big reveals. I'm like, then do not be like, I don't have any evidence. Haha, I do. I'm recording. Just be like, oh shit, I don't have any evidence. Guess I better go. And
yeah, you know, like, keep that to yourself. Like, we know that everyone has excellent like Wi-Fi because Duke is getting constant Google updates. Like, live stream that. I would be like literally live streaming this to Instagram, being like, I'm confronting my sister, confronting my sister's murder. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's actually really good. So now we all know if Jesse and I ever have to reveal someone's elaborate scheme and plot their downfall, we will be live streaming. Make sure you're following us on Instagram.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I think all the rest of my things we talked about in other sections.
Okay, yeah, my last thing is just like this, the final scene, like the big scene of this movie where like they've smashed all of the glass and like we get, you know, Helen's like gonna throw the hydrogen cube in the fire and everything just like turns slow-mo and then she's like gonna burn the fucking Mona Lisa. Everyone realizes what she's gonna do. Everyone's like trying to stop her. She's like bolting across the room, but in slow motion as this like song about the Mona Lisa is playing. It is exquisite. It is so over the top. I just,
it's so cathartic. Like, you want Helen to have this just like just destroy all this man child's expensive things, destroy the goddamn Mona Lisa so no one will be ever able to talk anything good about him ever fucking again. It's just like, oh, it's so good.
It is. And again, so listeners, there's this repeated thing in the movie where like his goal from the get-go has been to, he wants to do something that will make him be remembered in the same breath as the Mona Lisa. And so she gives him that. He will always be remembered as the person who destroyed the Mona Lisa. And it's so good.
It's so good. I just, I don't know. I just want, I don't know. I want this sort of level of catharsis for all kinds of marginalized people. I'm just like, I'm literally smacking things in my recording studio, everyone. Just, I don't know. Helen having this catharsis for like her murdered sister is just like, ugh, just put it into my veins.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the health and science section where we research stuff.
All right. Okay. So first off, in the scene where Birdie's in her quote unquote pod with like 80 people having a rave in her Manhattan loft or whatever the fuck, she's going through the puzzle and then, you know, an old dude slides in to be like, I think that that musical composition is a fugue. And you're like, is that Yo-Yo Ma? And it's fucking Yo-Yo Ma. comes in to like, is having, this is the other best cameo, to drop some like music puzzle facts. I looked up what this was, because I'm just like, that's cool. And it's kind of a microcosm of the structure of this movie, because a musical fugue is like, you have like a theme, and then you have like two or more subjects who are basically imitating. So you have like, you know, you have music going and then you have like three singers. And then like the first singer is singing something. And the second singer is singing basically the same thing, only at like a different key or a different pitch. And then like the third voice comes in and they're doing the exact same thing as the other two, just like at another different key or pitch. And so just like imitating what's going on, but it comes together differently because it's like just doing like different musical things. I have a musical example that I believe is from Guys and Dolls, so I thought of you.
Cool.
That I can put in the show notes. I will just drop this into
which song is it?
It's actually Fugue for Tin Horns is actually what it is called. It's cool. Like the three dudes are talking about horse racing and they're like singing a little ditty about it. Anyway, and I say that because like literally the first hour of this movie, you get sort of from like different perspectives, and then the second half of the movie is the same as the first, only from more of like when you know that that Helen and Benoit are like here to investigate Andy's murder and Helen is impersonating Andy, so you're getting like the same thing only from a slightly different perspective. So I thought it was just like kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great.
The Mona Lisa is in fact not painted on canvas, it's painted on wood. A common, I think, misrepresentation of the Mona Lisa. So there is the possibility that the French government gave him a fake Mona Lisa, but that's not as narratively satisfying. So let's pretend that this is the real Mona Lisa, because fuck Miles forever.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you all so much for listening. Next time we're going to be talking about Encanto. Last time I told you that we'd be talking about Wakanda Forever, but Jesse said that it's too sad for me to watch right now. So we're going to wait on that one. Reminder to, you know, support us on Patreon, find us on Instagram and Tumblr, check out our website, which is #ruthless.com. And until next time,
compost the rich.
Hell yeah.